Okay. Alrighty. So welcome everyone. This is the welcome to the regularly scheduled Tuesday night meeting of the Land Use Committee of the Newton City Council. I'll be your host. I'm Councilor Schwartz, Vice Chairman of the Committee. Our chairman is coming late. To my left we have Jim Cody, Councillor at Large from Ward 3, Deborah Crossley, Councillor at Large from Ward 5. On my right, Rick Lipoff, Councillor at Large from Ward 8. Next to him on his right, Jake Auchengloss, Councillor at Large from Ward 2. And we have also Councillor at Large Brian Yates from Ward 5, visiting from zoning and planning, no, from finance. Sorry about that. This meeting is not being videotaped, but it's being audio recorded. We have staff with us tonight. To my right, the clerk of the committee, Nadia Khan. To her right, one of our planners, Michael Gleba. Next to him, our newest planner, Neil Cronin. And next to him, Bob Waddick from the Law Department. And watching it all, and under her purview, is Alexandra Anant, our senior planner, to the far right, my far right. Our first item of business tonight is number 12616, which is for special permit for 17 Malvern Terrace. And while that was on our agenda, it actually has been moved for tonight. It has been moved to our meeting at June 7th. What's that? Or June 14th. So if you're here for that, we apologize. It was in the agenda that was published, I think, before the Friday packet, but that has been moved. And so moving on to the second item on our agenda is 14616, Waubun Neighborhood Area Council. That's Teresa Fitzpatrick requesting a temporary one-day license pursuant to Section 30-2.33. of the City of Newton Ordinances to hold the 12th annual Waubun Village Day. Is Teresa here? No? Doesn't need to be here. Okay. So this is very straightforward. I think we are pretty familiar with the Village Days, and Waubun Village Day is not different than those. It's the 12th annual. In our packets, I don't know if councilors have gotten a chance to look at item 146.16, it basically says this is going to include a fun run. The streets will be closed from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's Woodward Street from Beacon to Chestnut, Pine Ridge Road from Woodward to Chestnut, and Wyman Street from Woodward to Chestnut. So unless there's anybody here to, or any comments from the counselors? Counselor Crossley from Ward 5, no less.
I would be happy to move approval on this item.
Excellent. Let me just make sure there's no comment from the public. Anybody here to speak about that item? No? All right. Well, we can move to a vote then. All those in favor, please raise your hands. This is for Wavin Village Day permit. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6-0 with 2 absents. Terrific. We are making such progress, guys. This is awesome. Blazing. The next item on our agenda is item 128.16. This is a special permit petition to create an accessory apartment at 911 Bridge Street in Ward 1. And at this time, the petitioner is welcome to come to the podium and make a short presentation. And I'll just add, just as far as ground rules, so you can assume that all the counselors have read the materials, which include a memo from the planning department as well as the plans that have been submitted. So you're welcome to say what you like, but sometimes keeping it brief keeps it sharp in our minds. But if there are any things that you want to highlight, please feel free to make those points. We'll then probably ask you questions if we have anything that we're curious about. Okay? Go ahead. Please state your name and address for the record.
Can you speak into the microphone?
Oh, maybe now? Okay. So my name is Yulia Purvo. I live at 11 Bridge Street. Together with Mark Zelinsky, we own 911 Bridge Street, which is a two-unit apartment in MR1. Our special permit today is to create an accessory apartment in the basement of Unit 11. We occupy Unit 11. It's an apartment, it's a space of 970 square feet, and our understanding is that we comply with everything that all the requirements for creating this special accessory apartment.
So basically, Yulia and I, we bought the place last year. The bottom unit has a illegal unit, basically. So we bought it and we want to make it into a legal accessory apartment and with all the compliance as such. So, yeah, that's it.
Okay. At this point in time, I think I would ask Mike Gleaver to just make a very brief presentation. If you want to mention what relief is being requested, what the standard is, and any just summary of comments from the planning department's memo, and then we'll talk about it after that.
Okay. Well, we have the requested relief. It is basically a special permit to allow the creation of an accessory apartment in a two-family dwelling in an M1 district. So the criteria. So when you review this request, you should consider whether it is in an appropriate location, say a two-family dwelling in an M1 district, whether it will adversely affect the neighborhood, whether it will create a nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians, and whether the access to the site is appropriate for the number and types of vehicles. We also have a few more slides to show. This is the aerial map that shows the location at the corner of California and Bridge Street. We have the site plan. It shows the existing building. The footprint will now be expanded. There is more space being added to the building. So you can see the proposed. So as you see, to confirm the footprint, to confirm the within the existing basement, and this, we also have a layout for the proposed apartment, which again shows you on the left-hand side. The right-hand side is an existing two-car garage in the basement. And here's an exterior shot of the front facade of the existing home. Access will be for the front facade next to one of the existing staircases. This is also the driveway where the addition of the private parking will be placed. So one of the issues we had was having to deal with the proposed conditions. So basically, some of the paving is in poor shape. The petition has agreed to be paved. So there are very wide existing tree cuts, probably a little wider than we want now, but they are existing. And we do make a suggestion that some additional screening be added to, if we could go back two slides, or one. On the left, we see some existing landscaping. We'd like to see that kind of fixed up, since it is a pretty prominent location. It is connected to the existing and the maybe the private parking and make some improvements there.
Great. Thank you, Michael. At this time, if there are any questions from the counselors, we can entertain those. The counselor from Ward 5, Alderman Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I have no concerns about legalizing an accessory apartment. I just would like to get some clarity on some things you're doing. I believe I'm reading the plans to understand that you're creating also an additional egress. I'm sure to make it compliant, code compliant. And I'm not sure I understood clearly. Is the planning department recommending narrowing the curb cuts on Bridge Street and California Street, or one or the other?
No.
You're not? Okay.
You're not.
Just repaving as is?
Yes.
So I assume there'll be a condition to review a landscape plan prior to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I guess I just want to mention, of course, on that particular corner, it's really a very busy corner, and you wouldn't want to landscape it so that you couldn't see.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Great. That's all. Thank you.
Any other questions from the counselors for the petitioner or comments? Counselor Auchincloss?
Is there an additional parking spot?
Yes. Yes, the new unit requires one additional space, and there isn't that space shown on the site plan where additional parking can be put.
Okay, and you have no issues with that?
No.
My understanding, if it's not incorrect, is that they currently have 5 spots already, and there are only 2 required?
Well, so in total, they need 5.
They need 5.
2 units, plus 1 for the accessory apartment, and there are 2 inside the garage, and 3 more room on the driveway.
Great. So it sounds like the issue that's been raised is a little bit of landscaping, as far, not to block views, but as far as traffic views, but you guys are okay with that, it sounds like. You're nodding. Okay. Perfect.
Yep.
All right. So I think that at this point in time, unless there are any public comments, on 911 Bridge Street. Nobody's here for that? All right. Now, at this point, we could entertain a motion to close the public hearing. So moved by the counselor from Ward 2. All those in favor of closing the public hearing? It's unanimous, 6-0. So 2 absent. Do we have a motion to approve? All right. We have a motion to approve from Council from Ward 2. Do we have a proposed board order? Sorry, council order.
Okay. So the proposed findings, just to kind of go over what the criteria was, just to find that it's an appropriate location for an accessory apartment in the two-family dwelling in the multi-residence one district, because the existing dwelling, which is consistent and scattered with adjacent residential properties, can accommodate the apartment without any increase in the footprint. The apartment does not adversely affect the neighborhood as it will be constructed in existing space. Does it sufficient in the dwelling that has sufficient interior and exterior capacity to accommodate the required additional parking stall? There will be no nuisance or serious hazards to vehicles or pedestrians since the property does have a large driveway area with ample curb cuts on two public ways that allow for adequate sight lines for drivers and pedestrians. Also, similarly, just a few more findings that access is appropriate because any possible traffic impact will be dispersed across the two adjacent public ways. And the creation of an accessory apartment will help diversify an housing stock consistent with the city's comprehensive plan.
Okay. All right. Now, let's the conditions. Do you want to just tell us anything that's unusual?
No, so it's just the standard conditions. As with any other accessory apartment, the ownership of the apartment cannot be held separately from the dwelling in which it exists. That the owner of the two-family dwelling must occupy either one of the main dwellings or the accessory apartment. And in the event it's sold, the city must be informed through ISC and that there will be inspection for determination of compliance with this decision and all applicable codes.
All right. Do you understand that? Yeah. Yes. You're nodding. Councillor Crossley.
Thank you. I don't see the condition we just discussed about the planning department review of the final landscaping plan. Should that be included?
I think in 5C it says submitted a final landscape plan to the Director of Planning and Development for review and approval.
Okay. Oh, sorry, I missed that. Thank you.
All right. All right. Well, anybody, any comments on the conditions, any concerns, any amendments, any additions? Seeing none, let's take a vote on the motion before us. It is a motion to approve. All those in favor? We have six in favor, none opposed, two absent. Always want to do this. All right, there we go. So you guys are all set. This will come up at our meeting, Nadia, next week, I suppose,
next Monday,
so the 16th. And you don't have to be there. It does require two-thirds of the board, sorry, the council. And I guess the clerk's office will be in touch with you when and if that's finalized, okay?
All right,
thank you for coming. Next item on our agenda. Item 129-16. This is for 23 Howe Road. I see Attorney Morris is with us tonight. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to make a brief presentation highlighting the highlights?
Certainly. For the record, my name is Terry Morris. I'm an attorney representing Mr. Richard Severini, the owner of the property at 23 Howe Road in Newton Center. I think this petition represents one of the anomalies in the FAR ordinance. It really underscores the challenge that was presented to the Board of Aldermen 5 years ago when they had to spend so much time in trying to craft an ordinance that would deal with the myriad situations in an attempt to try to achieve the principal objective of FAR, which is establish a spatial relationship between the building and the land in which it sits. And for that reason, the biggest single change was to adopt provisions that would measure everything above grade, which includes a portion of the basement, the attic, and so forth. The objective was certainly laudable, but I think this petition underscores the difficulty in trying to craft an ordinance so precisely as to cover every possible situation. As you know from the planning department report, this was approved, this exact same building was approved back in 2009. Due to the economic climate at the time, there were statutory extensions of time passed by the state legislature. There was an extension of time given to this project by the Board of Aldermen. Eventually, when it came time for my client to build the property, tore the house down, and he went to file a building permit, and he was told, oh, things have changed. In 2011, they changed the rules. And now, the house that you want to build is actually too big for the relief that was granted at the time. So he's simply here to ask for the same petition, the same relief, excuse me, FAR relief, to build a building that was exactly the same as what it was approved back in 2009. The only other thing I would say is that the planning staff report, I think, correctly identifies the reasons then and the reasons now why it should be approved, and that is that the scale of the building is consistent with the neighborhood. And that is my brief presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Morris. At this point, Neil, would you like to just give a brief presentation from the planning department's point of view? Actually, can I just get a show of hands? Anybody here from the public to discuss this? 1, 2, 3? Great. Okay. We'll get together in a second. Go ahead, Neil.
All right. So this is a special permit under Section 7.7.3 to exceed the FAR Section 3.1.9. When reviewing this request, the council should consider whether the request to exceed the FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. This is a small area of the neighborhood. As you can see, High Road is covered there by the foliage. And this is the proposed site plan. As Attorney Morris indicated, this is the same house that was approved earlier, so there has been no change to the site plan. And this is just what the front elevation looks like, proposed elevation. So with the FAR, in this particular zoning district, the maximum allowable by right is 0.44. The proposed dwelling has an FAR of 0.64. So as Attorney Moore stated before, the dwelling is the exact same. When the FAR was calculated at that time, it was 0.426. Old rules governing FAR did not include attics, basements, or garages. So the new rules governing FAR translate to roughly 1,300 square feet of space that was previously unaccounted for. That's why the FAR is ballooned.
Okay. Can you go back to the aerial shot? I think that'll help people located. And if you take out that 1373, this is just a question I had, do you do a calculation? Have you done a calculation, I guess? What's the total? Because it's 6,500 for the lot, and what's the total of the current square area? Just to get a handle.
I want to say it's
3,600, I guess. Yeah, so you take out 13, it's about 2,300 out of 6, okay. So it brings it down quite a bit to, I guess, about 35, 30, 40. All right. Quickly in the head. All right. So any comments from the counselors? Any questions? Why don't we, since we have some folks from the public.
Do you want to listen to the public?
Yeah, I was just going to say, unless we have burning issues, I just thought we should hear from the public first, and then we can dovetail on that. Do you guys want to come to the microphone? No? Yes? Comment? Pro, con? No? Come on, you got the babysitter, you came out, you might as well.
Good
If you could just state your name and address for the record.
My name is Joe Canavan. I live on 16 Howe Road, essentially across the street from the proposed site. The only concern I have is if you go back to possibly the plan, not the but the of the whole structure, not the site plan. We're looking at a building now, right? That essentially is going to rise 4 stories from street level. Not essentially, will rise 4 stories from street level. That is not typical of the neighborhood. The houses are much more closer to probably what the fire is. In fact, we're looking at a fire that's 50% higher than what's allowable. I just have a concern that it's a very large structure for a 6,500 square foot lot. It's much taller than the surrounding homes.
Does the planning department have any data on the surrounding homes to address that concern?
There are one house in the immediate area that is over 4,000 square feet. Going further away from the house, the houses over 3,700 square feet. And going a bit more far out, house over 5,000 square feet and 3,700 square feet as well.
And the height, that was a point that was raised. Do we have a sense of how high these structures are? Number four.
No, I have that information.
Okay. All right. Anything else, sir?
I don't know if I want to talk about the grade.
Nothing
else for me.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else like to? Thank you. Thanks for your comments. Anybody else like to make a statement?
Hi, my name is Naomi Dorfman. I live at 19 Howe Road, which is directly adjacent to this 23 Howe Road site. As the next door neighbor, we already suffer from some drainage issues in the neighborhood, especially on our side of the road. And my concern, I have a concern not only about what Joe just spoke about with the height of the building, but also with possible drainage issues from having this, if this property is going to be built up at all. I don't know. I'm not really versed at reading these things, but I am somewhat concerned that we might have some drainage issues coming down into our lot from the next door neighbor's lot. So that's something that I just wanted to address. And also to second the height. I know there are some bigger homes on Jane Road and nearby, but on our road, Howe Road, which is a very small street, as you can see, the homes are all very much of the same kind of, you know, 1920s nature, similar in size and height. This would definitely stick out, in my opinion, not in a good way. I am concerned about the exact effect of this house on the street.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? Oh, good. Come on up.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Julie Catton, and I live at 532 Parker Street, which is basically around the corner from the property in question. But my yard and the Dorfman's yard back up to one another. And what I'm about to say probably is not relevant to the FAR, but having lived in the neighborhood for 25 years, I have seen what was the original Severini house that was built by Mr. Severini Sr., which was a beautiful Italian-style Tudor, sit empty for about 12 years. There have been infestations of skunks and raccoons and other things that have gotten into the original house with broken windows, etc. It's been an eyesore in the neighborhood, and I think I can speak for some of my neighbors that we have concerns about whether or not we're going to be dealing with another eyesore once a 4,400 square foot home that I think Joe said is either 3 or 4 levels high, that was originally, I believe, 2,300 square feet and it was only a 2-level house.
Great, thank you very much. Any other public comments? Okay. Counselor. Jake? Oh, sorry. Counselor Crossley.
Thank you. So I'd like to get a few more facts. I think I understand. I have not had a chance to go by the site, but I understand that the original house was razed. So we have an empty lot.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that this particular set of plans was approved either before we had FAR or in the previous FAR ruling, which is correct.
I think it was the previous FAR.
Okay, because once upon a time we didn't have FAR applying to residential. I remember.
In fact,
approved prior to 2009.
The 2009 board order actually increased the FAR from 0.41 to 0.426, where an FAR of 0.30 was allowed. So.
Right. Okay. So.
So according to the documents we have, that there was an increase in FAR allowed in the last. Go around.
My memory is vague, but I it was just before I got onto the board, and it was the spring of 2009, I think, when the first FAR ruling was adopted. So, okay, so I get all that. Still, it would have required a special permit in order to move forward, and the criteria is that it not derogate from the size, scale, character, and so forth of the neighborhood. So by itself on this, you know, these nice drawings which don't show the house in context, it looks like a fine house. I'd like to get a sense of how the planning department is counting stories. To me, from the front elevation, it looks like a 2.5-story house, which is, by the way, we define a 2.5-story house. What you have is an underground garage. So part of the basement, therefore, is calculated into the FAR now, which wouldn't have been the case previously. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. The way FAR was calculated previously, my understanding was that if attic space was finished habitable space, it should have been counted in the FAR. This looks like it always has been intended to have finished habitable space in the attic. So I'm just, that's just a point of confusion for me, is why it would not have been counted previously. I know it's counted now, whether it's finished or not.
More of it might have been counted in the current FAR?
I'm just wondering, there's such an enormous disparity between what the original calculation was and what the current calculation is. I guess I just like to understand it. Sure.
I've got a lot more to say. This isn't my ward, and I've been dealing with this property for a while, but there are two dormers on the third level, are there not? Can you see them? And they're not drawn in as boldly as the ones before, right? So there's a full third floor. So the question is, were those dormers there in the 2009 plans?
Just curious.
Do you see the dormers on the third floor?
I do.
Were they there in the 2009?
It's the same plan.
It's the same exact plan. Okay, so you've got the attic and you've got the garage that is being added because of the change in the FAR rules, which is pumping it up.
I get the basement. My question is, because these were presented to us as the plans that were always, you know, everything is exactly the same, except for how FAR is counted. But the FAR calculation here doesn't go by floor. I mean, sometimes when you get the FAR calculations, the architect shows you, you know, how much basement space, how much first, second, attic, so forth, garage. That's not clear here, so that's why I'm just trying to get some clarity. In 2009, my understanding was that the way FAR was calculated is if these were the plans that were shown, the attic would have been calculated because it's habitable living space. It's finished. It's proposed as finished, not as an open, you know, unfinished attic. I just want to clarify.
Is there a question whether these are the same exact plans as in 2009?
No, that was the question.
Sounds like that's been answered, right.
My question is that I don't understand the enormous...
The calculation.
Yeah. The basement garage, meaning that you're counting some large percentage of the basement as FAR, by itself doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
So,
let me see if... I think Councilor Lipoff wanted to say something, but if Alexander wants to jump in, were you about to explain the FAR difference? Or does anybody at the planning department want to...
I believe we now calculate it differently on the third floor, although off the top of my head, I cannot really remember the difference, but significantly more of the third floor space counts under the current rules, is my understanding.
Okay. That might be part of the answer. Yeah?
So I'm looking at the proposed attic floor plan, and the second-story roof over the garage, and this is really a deep, and also the proposed second-floor plan, and the dormers that are drawn on the attic floor and the second floor are little doghouse dormers, but the dormer that's drawn over the garage is actually a wide shed dormer. So the question would be, which is it?
Are you looking at the second floor and the dormer shown on that one, or are you looking at the third floor?
If you look at the second floor plan and the attic floor plan, it shows two doghouse dormers.
In the front?
Yes, facing Howe.
Part of the bonus room.
The bonus room. And then you see the doghouse dormers on the roof plan above. But what you're looking at, it's just a...
Oh, I see. On the elevation, it looks like a shed dormer. I see what you're saying. Could we get clarification on that?
That's only important because, you know, when it's supposed to be built according to this once we approve it.
Right. Perhaps the petitioner wants to address that? Attorney Mars, it looks like the elevation does not follow the floor plan, showing a shed dormer in the front over the garages instead of the two doghouse?
The only thing I can tell you, Mr. Chairman, is that I think as Neil pointed out, we simply took the exact same plan, they were all on one sheet that was approved and referenced in the board order in 2009. The only thing that was changed in that plan was the calculation of the FAR. So these are exactly the same plans that were approved. I can't speak now, 7 years later, as to how, I can tell you that with respect to the change, the floor area ratio worksheet that was done by the architect in this instance, much of the additional floor area is attributed to two things. You now count mass below first story. There's almost 800 square feet there that only 275 square feet were counted before. Certain floor area above the second story, there's 576 square feet that's now counted.
What was the first number before 576?
First number is the mass below first story is almost 800 square feet, 3 feet short. The certain floor area above the second story, and this is right off the city's worksheet, is 576. I'm just telling you that there's a lot of things, spaces that are now counted that weren't counted before, and that contributes to the big bump in FAR. But this is the exact same plan that was approved.
Okay. I think that...
You also have photographs of the old house, which might prove informative when you say there were two very large dormers on the attic level in this house. There was a shed dormer on the other side. There were large dormers on this house, and they had steep pitch. It was a Gothic style house. So if you care to look at these, I can introduce those.
I guess, Attorney Marks, the only thing I'm trying to get at is, and I think Councilor Coffey was trying to get at, is it's a little bit inconsistent on the sheet that has been presented to us. We're not sure whether it's a shed dormer or two doghouse dormers. That if we refer to a plan, we want to be able to refer to the right plan in the board order.
I think the board of your board order addressed the issue of the dormers. There was a condition in there that talked about the ability to go back to the historic commission and ask for a change, if that was.
I see it. Okay. Yep. It was.
And that maybe explain why there was that condition.
For petitioner may at his option request permission from the Newton Historical Commission to change the design of the shed dormer over the garage doors to two doghouse style dormers.
Right.
If the Newton Historical Commission approves this dormer modification, the petitioner may modify the dormer over the garage doors to the design approved by the commission without amending the special permit.
I think inherent in the board order was the flexibility to change the dormers.
Okay.
And that condition covers it.
But does that change the calculation? That's not enough to explain the significant change in the calculation. Okay. So I think that answers your question, Councilor Clough. I know that Councilor Lipoff and Councilor Cody both had comments they wanted to make. And so Cody,
I'll defer to the home counselor.
All right.
Thank you. Before you.
This house has been vacant for a long time. It's been an eyesore and an issue for the neighborhood, and I'm glad we're moving towards some type of development. I do want to say to the people that have issues concerning drainage, the FAR could be reduced here, but the footprint's going to be the same. The displacement of the water is going to happen. There will be regulations put upon the owner to keep the water on site, and there will be holding tanks, and there will be remedies. Okay, so I don't want you to worry about that. But I understand why you worry. It's an interesting quandary we have here. People want us to reduce the size of homes, and we did that with the change in SAR. And yet here we are in this situation where we have something where we previously approved, and now, based on our new rules, we would say that this possibly is too big. Because this owner got the approval before, I feel strongly, and looking at the size of this home, with the garage being below grade, and the height of this house being under or within the 36 feet, which everything else in the neighborhood is from grade, that it does fit in with what we would typically approve. We've had issues with this house, and then we had issues with the lot, and I'd like to see something be built here. I don't think that the FAR is extraordinary, but it is an interesting debate to have, because based on our regulations today, with the garage and with the other areas being included, this would be a huge ask. I know I'm not being definitive on how I feel about the FAR. I want to discuss it with my colleagues a little bit more, and I'll have a little bit more to say about this at the end. Great, thank you. I think actually Councilor Cody was just a little bit ahead of you, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's interesting to hear the comments from Councilor Lipoff, because that's my concern, with that it fits the neighborhood, and you've been working on this project. So that's my big concern, because for planning, I can't figure for life me why you don't consider this a three-story. I looked at the Google Maps now, which still shows the old residence, and it shows the heights, and it shows, it does show the pitch, and there were dorms in that old house, but it doesn't look anything like the size of this structure here when looking at the fact that, to me, it's three stories. So I'd like to, if the planner could explain why this illusion of three stories is actually not three stories.
I think that it's the regs. I think that it's because they're not, but I'll defer.
So it has to do with the floor area of the third floor being less than two-thirds of the floor below it. So that makes it consider a half story, because it's only a portion of the floor below, and it is within the 36 feet peak to the peak height when you look at the average grade plane.
Okay. Councilor Auchengoss, sorry for the delay. Dazzler.
I'm going to take the opposite point of view as the counselor from Ward 8. To me, it's totally immaterial whether we approve this or not in 2009. Laws are passed to change behavior. And unless it was explicitly a grandfather clause in the modification that we made, then it's frustrating, I'm sure, for the petitioner, but it has no impact on the fact that, as it currently stands, this project does not meet the FAR, and they haven't really presented a reason why it is deserving of a special permit on its own merits, as opposed to this kind of, well, sunk cost hope. And we've heard from the neighbors that it doesn't really fit into the neighborhood that well, and it may not meet the special permit criteria on its own merits. So for me, this one is almost certainly going to be a no vote.
So if I could, I'm just going to make a couple comments. I think those are good points, but two things that I think we have to keep in mind. One is the previous board order in 2009 actually did approve an increase in FAR above the allowed, so significantly. So at that time, there was a judgment made about whether it was in derogation to the neighborhood around it and not in keeping with that. So that, I think that's the reason why I think we have to at least consider that judgment that was made by the board in the past, because the neighborhood hasn't necessarily gotten smaller, the houses haven't necessarily gotten smaller. So that particular judgment, I think we can take under advisement and make our own judgment, but it's, at least it's something that we have to consider. The second point, I think, though, is just to be clear, we should take this petition on its own merits as any petition that comes before us. If there are engineering concerns, we should make sure those are addressed. I do note that in the proposed board order, council order that we will be discussing in a couple minutes, condition 2C does, just to reassure the public, does require, it says, filed that the that no building permit shall be issued pursuant to the special permit until the petitioners have filed with the city clerk, Commission of Inspection Services, and the Department of Planning and Development a statement from the engineering division approving the final site plan. So it does require engineering to review and judge the drainage issues. We can beef that up as well. We can specify that drainage be one of those issues, but that is part of what engineering is supposed to do. I think Councillor Yates would like to make a comment, and then we'll get to Councillor Crossley.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the issue you just mentioned, I think we found in the past that there appears to be conflicts between of ISD and engineering as to whether or not water retention on site is, not on this site specifically, but in several other instances, is in fact been achieved, and the engineers appear to have had different opinions from the inspectors, and I would urge that if you said beef up this thing, I would say call out the specific requirements of the zoning ordinance that all water shall be retained on an owner's property, and that this will be subject to the approval of the city engineer as an explicit thing. As it is now, I believe they have consultation with ISD, but the final call appears to be ISD's, and I think on the water issue that it should be engineering.
Okay, thank you. I think we have one more comment from Alder Councillor Crossley, and then before we close the public hearing, we might hear from the petitioner's attorney.
We have two comments. I'll follow on with the business about maintaining their rainwater runoff on site. There's a pretty extensive, although very small and hard to read, engineering document here from Joseph Porter, and it shows a pretty extensive amount of on-site filtration proposed. What I'm surprised at, unless it was part of the original package that was permitted in 2009, is why there isn't an engineering report from the city. And that should be, I would suggest, updated, whatever it was in 2009, should at least reviewed and updated by the engineering department. The second thing is, I think to do, in order to do due diligence on this at this point for me, and I'm sorry, we have like 7 things on the agenda. I have not been able to get to all the sites. I will abstain this evening on this one, and I'm happy to go through the board order, but I'm going to make sure I go take a look at the site before it comes to the full council.
Can you drill some test sites? Got it. Okay, any other comments from the councilors? Attorney Morris, did you have a comment before we close?
Just by way of information, Mr. Chairman, I would point out that Mr. Joe Porter, the person who prepared this plan, is available to answer any questions about the drainage or water or how it was designed before and how it's meant to function now.
Actually, if you could please, do you want to come to the microphone, Mr. Porter, and just, since this has been raised by the public and we're about to close public hearing, we might want to... Just a question for you that I would have, sir, is did you know or are you aware of any current water drainage issues on the site that you're trying to address?
No, and as you know, this board has always required a 100-year storm storage on site. That has not changed since the 2009 decision. We had 100-year storage on site in 2009, so that storage has not changed since the decision in 2009.
Great. Are there any special features that you had to put into the plan that you want to review, or are they just standard?
They're standard for this type of home. As Alderman Cosby says, there's extensive drainage on this site. So it's not like it's a small system. This is a large system that will store the rainfall amount from all the impervious surfaces on site, including the roof. So, and the storage volume is apparently shown on the plan if they look at it distinctively looking for that. But it's clear that the drainage is present on the current design.
Excellent. Okay. Councillor Lipoff?
Just to add to the thoughts about the size of this home and what's happened since 2009, we often give a release of FAR, additional FAR, based on what's going on in the neighborhood and if it's reasonable. And if some don't feel that the 0.64 is reasonable, then we have to come up with what is reasonable. It may not necessarily be the 0.4, the point, you know, that would be the matching FAR for the area. It may be something in between. And my problem is, how do you come up with that? Do we start saying, take the dormers off, don't finish the top floor, the garages are below grade, what are you going to do with those? How do you scale this back, and where do we come up with the right FAR for this? I know this neighborhood, this house isn't completely out of context. Would we like the lot to be a little bigger? Yes, it is on a corner. So there's one house next door, not two. It's not in the road. It does have some relief from the corner of the street for additional visual setback. This is an interesting one, and there's not a perfect answer. But I tend to lean back on it was previously approved based on the scale of the neighborhood before. Our rules change now. I still don't have a definitive on what the right FAR should be, and it's a hard thing to do.
Okay. Go ahead, Councillor Offenglass, and then we're going to try to close this.
Yeah, very quickly, I'd just say, our rules changed to reflect the will of the city that people wanted smaller houses. So I understand that it was approved in 2009 in concert with the scale of the neighborhood, but we decided that we wanted smaller homes on a given lot, and so I think we need to respect that absent countervailing evidence.
Okay, so if there are any more comments from the... Sorry, go ahead, Councilor Corday, and then...
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. I just have a technical question. Joe, are you the architect now that... Did you approve these? I see they're revised this month. The engineer, I mean, you engineer. So Sullivan's the architect, you're the engineer that approves the plan? Is that, do I have this correct, who's doing what here?
He made the plan.
I'm confused with the question.
Okay, well, I have the plan here that was revised, right?
So the architect?
It's O'Sullivan Architects.
Rose O'Sullivan Architects.
Yeah, so in your position with this is as the engineer?
I'm the engineer of the site. I have a separate site plan.
You have a separate site plan other than what we have here? Or the one we have that one, but that's all matched up with this.
Yes.
Okay, because this shows the original date and it shows revised, but the study that you submitted matches up with this.
Yes, it's the same. Okay. The difference is they're trying to show the difference of how they calculated the FAR in 2009 versus how they're calculating it today.
Right.
The house has not changed. It's just how we have to calculate the FAR.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I'm just technical. I just want to see who has done what.
Okay. All right. Now, I think at this juncture, I would welcome a motion to close the public hearing if that's the will of the committee. Councilor Lipoff? Oh, please, go ahead, Alexandra. Ms. Anant.
I just wanted to note that when the board changed the FAR, we changed the FAR not because we wanted to make the houses smaller, but the board wanted the FAR to reflect everything that was built on site. So we actually changed how we calculated what went into the FAR, and we raised the FAR limits to also reflect that we're counting more. So it was really, the whole purpose of changing FAR wasn't necessarily because we heard that people wanted smaller houses, it was we just wanted to account for what was actually being built. So I just wanted to explain that.
Sure. I think that it's fair, though. I think what Councillor Offenbach is getting at is that if people wanted to measure the additional bulk that was out there, which is what we're doing with the new FAR, if there was some sentiment behind that, probably that the bulk was not being measured and perhaps was being approved without fully capturing the size, or at least the sense of size of what was being approved. So I think you both are right. All right. With that, we've got more public comment. Come on back to the podium. I'm going to lose my voice if this goes on too long. Go ahead.
Just one quick comment. The discussion seems to be leading towards the FAR caused this problem. If you look at the numbers, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but the old FAR was something on the order of 0.1, and the plans came in at 0.45, about a 50% increase over the FAR at the time in 2009. The current FAR is something on the order of 0.42, 0.44, something like that.
So, I'm sorry, sir, let me just correct you. So in 2009, it was an FAR of 0.3 was allowed.
Right.
And it was going up from 0.41 to 0.426.
Okay, so the 0.42.
The residence that was there was 0.41. They were going up to 0.426.
But the FAR was
0.3.
The proposal was 0.42. Which would be called a 30% increase. So there was still a substantial increase in size over FAR. That relationship is still pretty much holds true.
Right.
It's 0.4 allowable, 0.6 on the plan.
Right.
So there hasn't been a dramatic change in the way the calculation of FAR has affected the view of how much it exceeds FAR by.
Exactly.
If that makes some sense.
No, I think you're right. And that's what we were getting at with the previous judgment. All right. So, Councilor Lipoff, do you want to see in your ward? Do you have a motion to make? One last. Come to the podium if you're going to speak. You're always welcome to
add
your comments.
Those of you who have the last word. I have a question that's sort of, yeah, it's definitely related. Alexandra, forgive me for, I don't think I'm sharing anything that's not public knowledge. I went to the building department, to inspectional services to discuss this whole issue, and Andrea was kind enough to spend a good amount of time with me along with, do I see him here? I apologize.
Neil.
Neil.
And Alexandra.
Thank you. And they explained to me very carefully what the FAR is all about. But the one thing that Andrea,
she likes that.
No, she doesn't. I have a niece who's in Alexandria. She doesn't like not being called Alex. But anyhow, so what you explained to me, my question was setbacks, because we're in an old enough neighborhood that I believe our setbacks are 7.5 feet side to side and 25-foot frontage, 15-foot back. Yes? So evidently the original house was smaller than the setback.
Correct.
Now the bigger house is going to the limits of the setback? Yes, no?
Correct. Okay. Size of setback.
Okay. And the other thing that I think hasn't been pointed out, looking at the house straight on as we are, on the west side of the house, which is the side of the house that faces the Dorfman's, there was only a carport. There was never a second story there. So if we're taking into consideration runoff and those kind of things, I just want to point that out if engineering is going to take a look at things.
Great. Thank you so much for your comments.
Yep.
At this point, motions to close public hearing would be in order. Moved by the councilor from Ward 8. All those in favor? 7-0 with one absent. All right. Now we have a draft board order. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve with one more statement to say why.
Sure. Yeah,
I really believe that Mr. Canavan kind of nailed this with the whole FAR.
Relative proportion.
Relative proportion to what was before and what is now is about the same ask. So I'm happy to move approval.
Great. All right. Do we have a draft council order? Do folks want to just read that briefly to themselves and make any comments? Basically stating that basically this is the language that is required to approve an increase in FAR, that it's consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. All right, moving to... So those additional sentences are added to buttress that statement?
Sorry, what's the question?
The two additional...
So I can read those?
So those have been added to... Are those required by the ordinance?
It's supporting our findings.
Okay. Great, number two. Any other findings? Moving on to the conditions then. So, number one.
Yep.
Even though I'm going to abstain this evening to go see the site, seems to me that one of the findings we ought to be able to make is that because of the sloping lot slash the level of the first floor relative to the basement is substantially counted toward FAR. I wanted to add, and I don't know how you want to say it, but and nonetheless, we would need to find that the structures adjacent and nearby to both front elevations, because the corner lot has two front elevations, are of similar size and scale. And, I mean, that's what I'm going to look for when I go
sure.
to the site, and because I really want to see contextually whether this works.
But isn't that's captured in that first sentence, correct?
Not exactly, because it's not this explains, you know, that a good deal of the mass is in fact underground. By the way the rules are, if you're on a sloping site, but you have a portion of your basement, and in this case it's largely because of the garage that's underground, then you're required to count a large portion of the basement. About 50% is what I believe it is. But 50% of the basement may not be expressed as mass. That is one of the anomalies of our rule, which the petitioner was right to speak to.
Do you want to add a phrase to that third sentence?
I don't know that I want to wordsmith it right now. I'm wondering if do I want to add a phrase to the first sentence? I just think mention ought to be made of the sloping lot and the fact that the basement is counting toward the FAR where it is not entirely expressed in fact as mass above grade.
Okay, why don't we add a fourth sentence stating that, whether it goes between the first and second paragraph or whether it's at the end, right after the garage comment. We'll craft something, okay?
Okay.
As far as the conditions, moving on to conditions, there was a comment about the engineering and the concern about water beefing up that engineering part. That would be in 5, I think. Well, let's run through the conditions. So plan referencing, that's standard building condition, building permit condition, standard final inspection. So, Neil, do you want to... Where would you put this? Under 2C? You don't have the details up there? Do you want to go into 2?
No, I'm sorry. That's the end of the show.
Okay. So 2C is where I would think that we could put, if people are okay with, perhaps a sentence to the, a statement from the engineering division approving the final site plan, including its addressing of drainage.
Yep.
Coming to that effect. Just to capture that concern that was raised.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Councilor Yates.
I would call it out explicitly and just say that the proposed drainage will, and then quote the part of the ordinance that says will...
The 100-year storm and all that.
They'll catch it all, keep it all on site. And I'm confident. I mean, Mr. Porter is obviously well-respected. I don't think that'll be a problem, but I think given that people have raised the issue, I think we can give them a little more comfort level,
sure.
Saying that the engineers will approve it, not the inspectors.
Okay. Unless there's any opposition to that, I think that's fine. We have one comment from the chair. Go ahead.
Just to go on record, I'm going to abstain at this point because I missed part of the public comment, and so I'm going to reserve till we get to the full board.
Okay. Any other conditions, any other concerns? All right. We have a motion before us to approve. All those... Councilor Lipoff, we're voting. All those... All those in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 in favor. All those opposed? All those abstaining? So 4-0-3. All right, so Attorney Marks, you know the drill. This will be on our docket on Monday, the 16th.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members, for your time.
Great. I'm going to hand over the gavel.
Thank you, Councilor Schwartz. I apologize. I had another event to attend. I apologize for being delayed. All right, moving right along, our next item is 131-16. This is a special permit for 37 Westbourne Road. Joyce Bacon and Peter Greenspan at 37 Westbourne Road, Ward 7. Who I have here presenting this petition? Good evening. Come on up, Mr. Lee. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Use Committee. My name is Lawrence Lee. I'm with the law firm of Rosemer, Friedman & Lee, here on behalf of the owners of 37 Westbourne Road. With me today are Mrs. Vacum, thank you, and Dr. Greenspan, owners of the property, and their daughter, Shari, who are sitting in the back of the room today. What I would like to do is basically give you a quick outline of what we're here for. We're basically asking for a quick, relatively small FAR waiver. And I have some slides. Hopefully I can get this to work. Perfect.
So I'm going to give you a quick little tour of the site and explain it to you. Basically, the yellow is the locust, and what I did was I highlighted the direct abutters who have submitted letters of support to the city council, all in the pink boxes. You can see the site is basically got two, sandwiched between two streets. You got Westbourne Road here, and then you got Francis Street over here. Part of Francis is actually a private way, and it's an unimproved way, that section. Let's see if I can get the next slide. Perfect. That's just a record plan showing the taking by the city. The highlighted box is the locust, and then the back area, which is right here on Francis, shows the taking by the city for a main drain private way. That's the site plan that's in your packet. It shows the existing and proposed conditions. I'm going to zoom in to the slide next, which basically outlines the area that we're focusing on. There is a detached garage currently sitting right over here. What we're asking for is to attach it, and in doing so, renovate the interior. The reason why we're doing so is because currently the owners are in need for the property to be handicap accessible. With the renovations, we're going to switch the orientation of the garage door so that it faces Francis Street. There's going to be a carport added onto the property, which is right here. We have to fix the technical aspect of the SAR in that the carport technically doesn't meet the definition of a carport in that it is not open on three sides. So part of the SAR waiver is the carport, which takes up about 210 square feet. So in essence, we're asking for a square footage of 348 square feet of waiver. This is a plan showing the existing conditions. Again, this is all in your packet, showing the existing conditions of the first floor. You can see that there is a detached garage. Sorry, that's a laser here. The detached garage is an existing deck, and then there is the kitchen over here. The improvements that are going to be made essentially are to this area with the garage. Again, it's going to face Francis Street. This back area is going to be improved with a lift, and it's going to be accessible by a wheelchair. It's going to be accessible into the kitchen area. That's going to be renovated to more of an open floor plan to allow for easier maneuvering within the building. There's going to be an elimination of a bathroom on the first floor as well to accommodate this space that's needed. This is just a photograph of the existing conditions. You'll see that currently there's a ramp, and you can see clearly how hard it would be for the owners to maneuver through this. They would actually have to park their car, get out, come all the way back up around the front and around the side of the house towards the back in order to even get into the house. The ramp is not covered. It's not protected from any elements. The improvements will allow for the protection from elements, the snow, etc. This is the view from Francis Street. This is the back of the garage in which it's going to be coming down, and the garage door will face Francis Street. And this is the area where the private way begins. So, and this is a sign actually on the site that shows there's a private way beginning. In sum, the site is very constricted. It's got two front setbacks we have to deal with. We have to seek a variance in addition to a special permit because of the setbacks. You're making a building that is not accessible at the moment, accessible with a very modest 348 square foot change to it. We have support from all the direct abutters. Katie Holmes already reviewed and allowed for the demolition of the detached garage without delay. We're trying to do as minimal as possible to a house that is well over 100 years old so as to minimize the modifications, which Katie obviously likes. And that's pretty much the sum of the petition.
Good. Thank you, Attorney Lee. Planning, do you want to comment on this?
Sure. So we do have a brief presentation. It'll pretty much repeat much of what Lauren said, so I'll make that brief. So Elizabeth called that up. So again, it's a special permit to construct an addition for the garage. The special permit is to increase the non-conforming FAR from 0.52 to 0.59, where 4.1 is the maximum allowed. When you review this request, you should consider whether the addition will not be substantially more detrimental to the existing non-conforming structure in the neighborhood, so there's a proposed increase in FAR from 0.52 to 0.59. is consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. So here we have an aerial map showing the context with the neighborhood, the site plan, which largely is shown. And again, it does show how basically, the addition is pretty much where the existing garage is, and basically filling in space between the garage and the existing house, and bumping out somewhere towards the front. Again, the existing floor plan, and next to the proposed, which again we've seen. And here's the elevation. Existing to the left in the upper left hand corner, you see the existing garage. And how with the proposed addition, the garage will be fully attached to the house in the bottom. In the east elevation, you see the expanded garage plus the carport from towards West 1. And you can further see quite similar from West 1.
Okay, thank you. Members of the public wish to be heard on this petition. Is there anybody here wishes to speak? Seeing none, do my colleagues have any questions or comments on this? I'm sorry, is there someone who wants to speak? Come on up, ma'am, please.
Got this
thing. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Sarah Zicham Jacobian. I'm the daughter of Joyce Zicham, who resides in that house. I visit very frequently, and when I'm sick, I stay with my mom for days at a time. It's very difficult to get into the house when there's snow and rain. Going up the ramp, I slide backwards, and it's rather dangerous. This addition to the house and allowing the back access would be incredibly beneficial to me and would make the home much more accessible.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wish to be heard? Seeing none, are there any questions or comments from my colleagues? Councilor Crosby?
Yes, just one, please. No concerns about the proposal. Again, it's about consistency of documents. So, and a question. So I'm wondering why it's a carport and not an enclosed structure. Since it's enclosed on two sides, we have to count it in FAR anyway. So I'm just wondering what the rationale is for not making the entire garage sort of a drive-through. And then on the site plan, the line of the carport follows the line of the side yard setback, which means that it's angled. And on the floor plan, it is not. It's consistent with the garage. So I'm just wondering which it is. Because on the floor plan, there's a suggestion that the sight line parallels the entire addition, and the entire addition is square. So I'm just wondering, because it makes a difference on the setbacks that you call out.
Yeah, I would defer to the sight plan on that. Whatever book shows on that is the accurate version, in that the dimensions is 13.4 by 14.9.
So the carport actually has to have an angled wall.
It is going to be angled slightly to be consistent with the setbacks.
Okay.
And you had another question about why it wasn't built in as a total garage. I don't know if there's an answer for that.
Why isn't it enclosed?
I don't think there's a requirement today, but I take it that's a curiosity in some ways.
Yeah, I'm...
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Joyce Jacob, and we wanted to keep it as simple as possible and just have the carport and not have a big structure there. We thought this would keep it much more simple to just have the carport. Thank you.
All right.
That's simple and straightforward. Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Councillor Schwartz.
So I have two questions or comments. I think I guess my view of the site plan was that the proposed site plan, first floor plan, is that because the lift that they proposed to use would be between essentially the two garages. I mean, so between the garage and the carport, you wouldn't really have a drive-through situation, which was being referred to before. Second is that it looks like the length of the carport is much shorter than a car, so it's really just, it looks like it's just going to cover the front part of the car, which makes sense if they just want to keep the, you know, the exiting from the car covered. So I can understand if it's open and not completely closed for that reason. My question was, it looks like it's a little bit taller than the current garage. Is that right? It looks like the roof is kind of different. It's kind of like a slope in one direction.
You still on that slide presentation?
On the elevation.
Mike, would you be able to go back to the elevation?
Oh, one more.
So that's existing?
That's the proposed. So it just goes, it goes further up and connects with the house in a line like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so what we're seeing is the door from the carport. Is that right, in the south elevation?
Yes.
And does the carport extend, am I wrong, does the carport extend further towards the front, past the front of the house?
So you can see there's past one window on the first floor.
So if you're looking at the east elevation, the single window to the bottom right window, that's
mm-hmm.
part of the carport, or is that part of the new addition that's where the lift is?
That's the carport that's open to the east, to that side. So it's open to the neighbor to the north.
So how long is the carport? It doesn't look very long at all.
The plan says 14.3 feet. So it's 14.9.
It just doesn't look like that on the elevation. So it comes towards the front of the house, doesn't it? It would extend.
Mm-hmm.
What's the question there? I'm just trying to understand the elevation. I think the elevation shows the addition, not the carport.
Attorney Lee, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, the carport is right there. This extension of that roof line and this column, if I'm seeing that correctly there, that's the carport. And on, where's the...
That just doesn't look like the length of a car, though, does it?
It's not.
It's not. It's 14 feet.
Yeah, correct.
It's 14 feet.
Okay, that's what I was trying to clarify.
That's correct.
So maybe it won't be a typical garage size or even parking space size space. They don't need that. They just need, I take it, just need covering for the vehicle.
That's right. For wheelchair to get in and out without.
Any other comments by my colleagues? Seeing none, it's my voice. I'm going to need a motion to close the public hearing. We have a motion by Councillor Schwartz. Motion to close the public hearing. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 6 in favor, none opposed, 2 abstentions in closing the public hearing. We've been joined again by Councillor Lipoff and Councillor at Large, Scott Lennon, President of the Board of Aldermen. I need a motion to approve this. Councillor Schwartz has moved to approve.
I'll just say for the record, it seems to me this is a very straightforward, quite appropriate project. I see no problems with this whatsoever. Obviously, there's a legitimate need as a family. This is a modest, in my view, a very modest request. And I note that it's a special permit. So as long as these people are living here, they get the benefit of it. But going forward, this house will be handicapped accessible for someone else. A special permit runs with the land. I have to think that's a very good result here. So I would urge us to, when the time comes, to vote approval. So with that, Councilor Schwartz has moved approval. Do I have a draft board order?
You do.
All right.
So here we have proposed findings. That the extension of this non-conforming structure with the proposed addition being either substantial or detrimental from the existing non-conforming structure, since it's going to largely occupy the location of an existing similarly sized garage.
All right, let's just hold there. Is there any, and we don't need to read the second one out loud. Is there any question or comment on the first finding? Seeing none, let's go to the second one. Michael, I know you've underlined the 558. I take it that was just a placeholder.
Yeah, if it's a placeholder, just so it's clear that the FAR includes both the addition and the carport.
Okay. All right. Folks, want to take a minute to read the second finding? Any questions or comments on the second finding?
Do you want to just make it even clearer that the carport is part of the FAR?
I think it should be, and I think that'd be helpful if in the final order, Bob, if you could put something in there that makes it clear that the gross floor area ratio or the floor area ratio includes the carport area, which is a significant because the carport, I think, as Attorney Lee said, is a couple hundred square feet total here of the 500. Okay. Anything else from this one? Let's move to the conditions, please. I take it these are all of our standard conditions with the caveat that they need a variance from the ZBA. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. So our order obviously will be conditioned on them obtaining a successful variance, but I presume that it will be helpful when they go to the ZBA if they say they have our blessing. Okay? All right. We're ready to vote, folks? All in favor? Eight in favor, none opposed. It carries unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you, Attorney Lee. Good luck. I'm sure Attorney Lee will explain to you this will be taken up at the next full board hearing, a council meeting, excuse me, and then go from there. Thank you. Next item, 132-16, special permit to increase the number of stories at 45 Perkins Street. This is Rich and Jan Torme at 45 Perkins Street, Ward 3. A request to increase the floor area ratio from 0.33 to 0.48, where 0.40 is the maximum allowed by right. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Peter Sachs. I'm the architect for Rich and Jan Torme.
How are you, Mr. Sachs?
Good, good. I'll be brief.
Always appreciated here.
I know that. Rich and Jan have owned this house for 32 years. They approached me about doing a renovation to the house with the intention of doing something that would also be a preservation of the house as well. It's a very historic house. It's old. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it's a beautiful mansard house. What we are asking relief for is the house doesn't really have a basement. It's three stories. It sits out of the ground and is sort of incidentally, when it was built, beyond, has FAR characteristic to the basement being out of the ground. And it's also three stories. The addition is to add a garage, a kitchen, and to expand the third story to include a master bedroom. To the allowable FAR is 0.38. We have set the addition back 15 feet using new lot setbacks to get the additional 0.02. So the allowable FAR is 0.40. And what we're requesting is to go from 0.40 that would be allowable to 0.48, which would include the garage, the kitchen, and master bedroom addition. I think that all, I want to leave room for questions. The packet had some three-dimensional things in it, drawings of what we proposed. The one thing I would like to say in closing is I want to commend my client for going to the effort of asking me as an architect to do a set of drawings to preserve a house where there are many people in this town tearing down historic structures. Maybe my client might want to say something. I don't know. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sachs. Come on up, sir. Good evening. Name and address, please.
Thank you. My name is Rich Tony, and I live at 35 Tuckin Street in West Newton. And I am disturbed sometimes when I drive around town and see beautiful old houses, one in my neighborhood at the corner of Temple and Putnam Street that was torn down, and a couple of monstrosities put up there. So I am, my house is one of three in a row that were built, I believe, by the same builder back around 1870. They're all mansards of various designs. They're all set up similarly on the side of a decreasing hill. And I am hoping to stimulate a restoration and remodeling that stays with the architectural details and hopefully stimulate my neighbors to do likewise. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I apologize for stepping off the roster. Mr. Sachs, anything else you want to present at this point?
No.
Why don't we hear from the planning department on this, and then I'll open it up to public comment and take comments from my colleagues. So who has this one? Peter, go. Neil, go ahead. How are you?
Sorry about that. Two special permits to exceed the FAR and to increase the non-conforming number of stories. As Mr. Sachs said, the basement is underground, so it is counted as three stories, whereas 2.5 stories is by right. When reviewing this request, the council should consider whether the request to exceed the FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. The proposed increase in the number of stories is not substantially more detrimental than an existing non-conforming structure is to the neighborhood. And this is just a area here of the neighborhood. And the proposed site plan, as Mr. Sachs stated, this addition will meet the new lot setbacks, therefore qualifying the addition for the 0.02 bonus. We'll note that the addition is roughly 31 feet from the street. These are the existing and proposed elevations on the front. And these are the side elevations. You can see the addition there. The issues are that the lot is set for the basement, including the proposed garage, that counted as a story. The proposed garage is adding a little under 700 square feet to the FAR calculation. If the garage is not included in the calculation, the FAR would be 0.41, just over the 0.40. And the petitioner is proposing to meet the new lot setbacks.
Is that latter requirement, it's required for them to get the bonus, but they don't have to do that, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. That's funny. Is there any member of the public who wish to be heard on this petition? Okay. Seeing none, it's Ward 3. Do I have a motion to close the public hearing? So moved by Councilor Cody to close the public hearing. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 8 in favor, none opposed. The public hearing is closed. I have a motion to approve. Councilor Cody has a motion to approve. As Mr. Sachs knows, lack of comment doesn't mean lack of interest. It just may mean a good project. So with that, we have a draft board order?
Yes.
All right. Why don't we take our time just to go for the first one. I'm not sure why we had a sentence that says an appropriate location for the proposed additions. I don't know where we get that. Mr. Waddick, do you want to help us here? Is that just the standard language?
Right out of the okay. Special permit condition.
Okay. All right. Fine. Anybody have questions in the first finding? It seems to be number two, where it says the proposed increase in FAR is consistent with and not in derogation of. I think it needs to have the word because before you list A, B, and C.
Okay.
Right. And then let's just, does anybody have questions on A, B, or C? Questions or comments? Is there anything you want to continue on? All right, so any questions on one or two but for the suggestion I made? Okay. All right, number three. Again, I think we need the word because and then a colon probably. And then if you're going to have A and B, I'll be grammatical, but I'd put semicolons in the word and between A and B, if you're listening. All right, you just got to get them right. All right, any other, besides my grammatical question, commentary, Councilor Schwartz, you want to add to that? Or maybe you actually have something more substantive to say.
And I just want to go back to the setbacks. Can somebody, so I know it was said a couple of times that they're going to conform to the setbacks, but I was just looking at the zoning document. So not the front one, though, right? The front one is still, it's not changing to 13.3 feet.
Right.
The setback is 25.
The front setback is enclosed by the porch. I was referring to the addition being 31 feet from the front street. I apologize.
So, okay, but the front of the house is
legally non-conforming.
Okay, thanks for the clarification.
Okay. Any commentary? Yes, Councilor Crosley.
Sure. I didn't have any comments earlier, though. Just to be
specific,
you didn't ask us if we wanted to talk.
You know, because I thought I was just pushing it through. But if you want to say something, go right ahead.
I know. So actually, on number three, I have just an editorial comment, but well, for the most part. But then I thought again, I think the petition is fine. I just think we should recognize that the topography is contributing dramatically to the calculation of the FAR. And however you want to say that is fine with me, but, you know, the addition or additions are built substantially to the rear of the site, and so they're all presenting as three stories. And they're all presenting as, this bottom story is presenting as additional mass.
I'm certainly in favor of that, and so if we can add that kind of exchange, I think that'd be quite appropriate.
On B, I thought, so this is about the proposed increase in the non-conforming number of stories, where 2.5 is allowed by right, and is not in derogation of size, scale, and so forth, because if you go to B, the proposed addition will allow for a two-car garage, thereby removing, I would take out the view of and put vehicles from the street, period. Because
or street or in the driveway.
Whatever.
Maybe
thereby sheltering vehicles.
Sheltering vehicles and removing them from view?
Well, I don't know if we do. We don't normally rule on
sheltering
the view of vehicles. Yeah.
Okay. Bob, can we wordsmith that a little bit? Thank you. Did you want to add some comments? I'm sorry I didn't accommodate you before. Okay. If there's a point, we'll save it. Councilor Curtin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a quick technical thing. We're looking at the zoning calculation that they did, the review memorandum, and it has the height of the building. This is a real small thing, but I just want to make sure it's correct. So the existing is 27.64, and the proposed is 26.30, so it's actually going down. Is that just like an error from before that they're correcting, or a change in yacht elevations or something?
Who wants to tackle that in the planning department? Anyone?
I think I'd have to defer to the architect on that.
Mr. Sachs?
it would be an average grade calculation that probably is related to the patio, the stone patio in the rear.
And it's only a little thing. It's like literally like, you know, that much.
I think what Mr. Sachs is saying, because you have the stone patio in the rear, that's affecting it to some degree. Is that right?
Right. I mean, it's a compilation of numbers that are added together and averaged.
I think I'm hearing from the architect that, to the best of his knowledge, it's correct. How's that?
Joe hasn't said anything, so I think that it's probably correct if Joe Porter hasn't said anything.
And Mr. Porter would if he thought you were incorrect.
Absolutely.
That's good. All right. All right. Anything else from the findings? Conditions, please? Anything? Nothing unusual? Okay. All right, we have a motion by Councilor Cody to approve. All in favor of approval? 7 in favor. Any opposed? 1 momentarily absent. I'll get 8. 8 in favor. 8 in favor, none opposed, no abstentions. Thank you very much, Mr. Sachs. There's two more items on our agenda tonight. Do you want me to switch? I'll keep them in order. The first is the Beantown Companies, Inc., 288 Walnut Street, and then last is the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Boston. The next one, I am going to recuse myself, and so Councilor Schwartz is going to take over this one, and then we'll resume with the last item.
Okay, so we're back. Petition before us is 127-16. Such permit for the located daycare at 288 Walnut Street. I see that the petitioner's attorney Morris, is at the podium. Feel free to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Terry Morris. I have office at 57 Elm Road in Newton. And I am here representing the Beantown Company as a petitioner in this application. Taking a cue from you, Mr. Chairman, that the committee has already read the report, I would simply point out two things. I don't know if you do you have the site plan in your can you bring that up if you would, please? Okay. With me, first of all, I should introduce her with me tonight as part of the project team, Lou McCurry of Planning Horizons, who will speak to two documents that he prepared. One was a transportation demand management plan, and the other is a parking analysis, both of which I think are essential to the request for relief that we are submitting. Also, Mr. Joe Porter is here, the project surveyor and engineering company. And representatives from Tiny Trot Daycare Center are here also in the eventuality that any committee members may have questions about the operation of the daycare. We're here for what we think, There we go. So one of the unusual features of this site is the fact that there are on-site, I think that the planning department report says there are 6 spaces, or actually 9 spaces. One of the anomalies about this site is that, in fact, you see that shaded area there, which is identified as a plant on the plan as having been land having been taken by the Turnpike Authority. Several years after they took the land, they actually deeded it back to the Methodist Church, so it is now considered part of the site plan. But the key to this thing is a 20-car space parking lot across Newtonville Avenue, which the owners have a lease to use for parking and associated with the church. One of the anomalies was that the provision requiring a special permit for accessory parking, I believe, came into the ordinance in 1974. We were only able to track back the use of this lot back to 1980, so one of the suggestions of the chief zoning code official was that we actually include in petition the use of this facility for accessory parking. One of the other features you can see on the plans that you have in front of you, in fact, I took the liberty of delivering you a more recent plan which illustrates
and addresses two of the issues identified in the planning department report. The first being the fact that the waiver is going to require people potentially using metered spaces in Bower Street to meet the parking requirements. And the second is the fact that there was no play space identified on the original plan. We have since the plan before you identifies the play space. There is a requirement imposed by the state office that licenses daycare facilities of having 75 square feet of land for outdoor play space for every child that is serviced by the facility. Since we are proposing a development here, that a project here that initially has 60 students or children, that would require 4,500 square feet of outdoor play space. In this area here, bounded by the Turnpike land, Walnut Street and Newtonville Avenue up to the side entrance here, there's 4,700 square feet of land area which is designed as the play space. On the plan you have also, you will see, I believe, four squares or shapes of various sizes that indicates potential location for play structures. That was also called out because the planning department raised the issue about whether or not any play structures might be located within a setback, and we can state assertively that that will not be the case. With respect to the four parking spaces, one of the anomalies of the parking that is provided on site with respect to this building is that all of it precedes the dimensional standards that were adopted by the city in 1974. As a result, virtually all of them are substandard with respect to complying with the dimensional requirements for parking, whether they be 90-degree parking or parallel parking or angled parking. So they're all basically non-conforming. It does point out and illustrate one of the problems that we've had, and we've seen it a number of years, and I'm hopeful that perhaps phase two of the zoning review or zoning reform can result in a close look at the parking requirements, because what petitions are stuck with now is situations where we're forced to basically come in and ask for waivers because the parking requirements provide, for example, on a conventional parking stall, requiring a width of 9 feet and a depth of 19 feet, which by today's standards are anachronistic. More progressive communities, no knock on Newton, but other communities do provide, for example, spaces 8 by 16 or 8.5 by 16 for compact stalls. I call that to your attention because we have created, on the plan you had before, a full-size plan. We've created two additional spaces here that measure 9 by 16 and will be labeled compact spaces. We have also provided an additional two parallel spaces here that are in tandem. All four spaces will be reserved for use of the daycare employees. That's particularly important because tandem spaces, as you know, are allowed by special permit if, in fact, both of those spaces are controlled by the same entity, so that minimizes any inconvenience to the users. So those are available should there be a concern about not providing enough spaces on site. Also, my client has informed me that of all of the spaces on site, there is some flexibility in allocating the spaces. If need be, the spaces for the daycare center are required to be closer to the building. They can reallocate the spaces and have all of the on-site spaces next to the building so that it does not necessitate anyone basically crossing the street to use this facility. So, as you know, daycare facilities are allowed by right, subject to site plan approval. Most of the issues surrounding deal with landscaping and parking and circulation. And that is the case here. We're requesting a waiver of five spaces. And that is because this church, this entire church, which was converted from a church into office space in 1980, carried with it a very large parking waiver, or parking credit. And that is because of the use of the church as a church. The church was converted to office space largely as a result of being able to avail itself of that waiver. The previous occupancy of the 4,800 square feet that is now proposed for the daycare center was office space. As it pointed out in the memo, that would require 19 spaces, and the current use of that same space would require 24, hence the waiver of five spaces. So without further ado, I will now turn the microphone over to Mr. Lou McCurry of Planning Horizons, who will discuss, one thing I should point out first of all. With respect to circulation and access to the site, we are proposing as part of our transportation and management plan to have all of the traffic, whether you're coming from the east or coming from the west, basically approach the site from Lutonville Avenue, if you're coming from the east particularly, from Lutonville Avenue, proceed down to Harvard Street, and then come around and approach the site heading west on Bower Street. That is so that the passenger side vehicles, the passenger side of the vehicles will be basically adjacent to the sidewalk, facilitating a drop-off of children to the daycare center. For those of you who are looking for a comparison as to how this might work, I think I might have mentioned it in other venues. The Fisherman School, for example, which runs a summer camp, I think I've seen one of the most efficient ways of bringing kids to the site, picking up and drop off. They have an assembly line of automobiles that they can queue up. None of the drivers get out of the car. There are personnel, staff personnel there to unload the children, squirt them in, the cars keep moving. We're proposing a similar kind of transportation management plan here, where there will be staff members from the daycare facility on the sidewalk at times of a drop-off and pick-up to ensure safe access and egress from the site. So without further ado, Mr. Lou McCurry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morris. If you could state your name for the, and address for the record, sir.
I'm Lou McCurry, Planning Horizons. My address, 502 South Avenue, Western Mass. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. And when I was asked to join the team to help Tiny World set up the new daycare center at 288 Walnut Street, I thought the proposed location in the old church in the center of Newtonville seemed a natural use for the space. In spite of the potential challenges, I was eager to see what we could accomplish. I believe the end result of our work is a good fit for this site, and I would like to summarize our findings this evening. As we worked together to assemble a plan, four key elements had to be satisfied, and they are: one, as Terry alluded to, a simplified circulation plan for drop-off and pick-up of children that would promote safety and reduce conflict; two, an assessment of the parking capacity and occupancy in the area to determine where drop-off and pick-up could occur; three, we need also a real-world evaluation of the expected drop-off and pick-up patterns during peak hour at a similar-sized facility to see how this would actually translate into the proposed operation at 288 Walnut Street. And finally, developing an action plan with Tiny World on the actual implementation and continued oversight of the plan to ensure a safe and predictable operation. All right, so those are four pieces. Going piece by piece, we knew that with very limited on-site parking, we knew that the rear walk-in entrance in the back and the 9 2-hour parking meter spaces on Bower Street on the westerly side, sure. How do you? Just like, yeah, right there. Oh, that's okay. Right there. That's really the nexus of our parking. The 9 spaces on that side of Bower Street would be the key component for drop-off and pick-up, as well as vehicular access to the site. As Terry said, creating a one-way traffic circulation pattern from Newtonville Ave to Harvard Street and then westerly on Bowers to directly in front of the site reduces conflict and creates the safest possible condition for drop-off and pick-up. Tiny World will be very clear with its parents of the children that this circulation plan must be followed as part of the condition of their enrollment. The next aspect concerns the supply and expected demand for parking for those 9 critical spaces along Bower Street. It is important to note that all of those spaces are proximate to the main door and entrance on the same side of Bower Street, and all are within about a 30-second walk of the site. So those are any of the spaces literally right there to right there, 9 spaces on that side, the entrance being right about there. All within about a 30-second walk from the spaces to the door. The detailed results of our parking occupancy surveys are included in my report, but I will summarize. We did actually 13 counts, 13 different times we surveyed the area, 7 times between the 8 and 9 a.m. peak hour, and 6 times between 4:30 and 5:15 or the afternoon peak hour. All weekdays were surveyed. The results captured the highest usage for any 10-minute interval within those periods. From the 13 surveys, 11 times out of 13, either 0, 1, or 2 spaces on Bower Street were occupied. On two occasions, once in the morning and once in the afternoon peak hour, 3 spaces were occupied. All that means is as few as 6 spaces or as many as 9 spaces were available along Bower Street at any of those peak hours. I'd also suggest there's a limited amount of business use in that area, and those spaces are essentially apparently neglected all day as well as at the peak hours at the end of the day when businesses tend to close. Now, this is valuable information to us. However, it only helps explain the current supply of parking, and we had to look a little bit further at what the expected demand for Tiny World and 60 children would look like. So after some investigation, we determined that there was a daycare center of similar size, 63 children for license, in Brookline on 110 Harvard Street, known as the Little Corner Schoolhouse. So we went out there and surveyed on two different, twice on the same day, an hour, peak hour, a.m. and p.m., to see what types of expectation we could see for 63 children versus 60, which is what we're proposing at this point. Those one-hour surveys are explained in our report, but essentially this. The studies revealed that in the morning peak, there were 20 parental drop-offs in a one-hour period. In the afternoon, there were 17 pickups between 4:30 and 5:30 p.m. We also collected data in 10-minute increments, as we did through the parking counts on Bower Street, and the range was between 0 and 5 drop-offs or pickups in any 10-minute interval. So that's a very important piece of information. That was the peak. 5 was the peak. 0 was the minimal amount. The average time parked, whether it was for drop-off, was 8 minutes. For pickup was 7 minutes. So we know the turnover is very quick on the spaces. 9 of the 37 drop-offs and pickups we surveyed were actually appeared to be walking trips to the site, which would account for about 25% of the local traffic. We don't think it will be so high at Newton on Walnut Street, but 25% was the number there. Based on the current on-street availability of 7 to 8 parking spaces out of 9 along Bowers at peak hours, it's expected that there will be more than an adequate amount of parking at all peak times in close proximity to the site entrance to allow for easy drop-off and pickup for parents. This conclusion is based on an assumption that 100% of the parents will actually drive to the site, when in fact we believe that probably it will be somewhere between 15, maybe 20% will actually walk to the site because it is a neighborhood facility, which will further reduce the demand for parking. In any event, the number of available parking spaces along Bower Street exceeds the expected demand for those spaces based on both of our surveys. Finally, we've provided a separate transportation demand management plan, a TDM plan, that describes the steps Tiny World is prepared and committed to take to reduce vehicular trips and to ensure a safe and secure drop-off and pick-up operation. The plan highlights 8 specific action items. I will not go through each of those, but I will note 3 of the key components. Component number 1, Tiny World will assign a TDM coordinator, transportation coordinator, who will be the contact and staff person responsible for implementing the plan and ensure that compliance with the conditions of the plan and the board order are accomplished. Second, that coordinator will provide parking in a parking and access plan to all prospective employees and all prospective parents that will identify the following at a minimum. That all parental vehicular access will occur along Bower Street, headed westbound, using Harvard Street from Newtonville Ave in a one-way traffic flow. Direct access from Newtonville Ave to Bower Street, headed north, which would be essentially going... taking the left turn here. No, we're not going to do that. No one's going to do that. You're going to go around, and you're going to drop off and pick up here. No shortcuts. And that will be a requirement, so it won't be allowed. The location of the designated drop-off and pick-up of parking spaces will be along Bower Street. The TDM coordinator will be sure of that. And the most important piece here is the coordinator will actually be on-site, on the ground, outside, rain, snow, whatever the conditions are, at the peak hours to ensure that drop-off and pick-up occurs in an orderly fashion, and this will be an ongoing continuous basis, and there's a commitment to that. And finally, the third element of it is that Tiny World is also, since obviously MBTA service is nearby, agrees to help subsidize the cost of monthly MBTA passes for further to further reduce vehicular access to the site, especially for employees, and subject to the terms and conditions of the special permit. These are the conditions of the implementation of the plan, and I'd be happy to answer any specific questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McCurry. Did I get that right? Yeah, okay. We're going to hear from the planning department briefly, but I just want to get a sense for the show of hands. There's a number of people in the audience. Are you here to speak about this? Who's here for this particular petition? Anyone? No one. All right, great. All right, so planning, could we have just a brief presentation about primarily, I think, anything that you think is important, but I think that there'll be more interest in the parking and transportation management plan.
As Attorney Morris told you, it's a waiver of five parking stalls. The waiver, the requirement is that there's one for each of the 12 employees. To waive the screening requirements for an outdoor play area, and to waive the on-site drop-off and pick-up parking requirements. That requirement is also 12 spaces. So the council should consider whether literal compliance of the number of parking stalls, vegetative buffer, and pick-up drop-off stall requirements are impractical due to the nature of the use or the location, size, width, depth, shape, or grade of the lot, such that these exceptions will be in the public interest or in the interest of safety or protection of environmental features. There will be no nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians. Access to the site or the streets is appropriate for the types and numbers of vehicles involved. This is an aerial map. As you can see, it's right in the heart of the Newtonville neighborhood. Site plan, which Attorney Morris has gone over.
Can you show us on that site plan where the play structures would be?
They would be in the where the front of the church used to be on Newtonville Avenue. Oh, sorry.
What is that?
Longwell Street.
The westernmost part. Okay. So it's closer to Walnut, away from Newtonville.
Right. It would be between Walnut and the typical entrance of the church, or the historic entrance of the church.
The next one,
in the concerns, the site plan that we reviewed for your packets was not submitted in time for review. There's the lack of required parking for employees, the 12 employees, which is also updated in the new plan. Also, which is stated that the reliance on metered spaces for pickup and drop-off may not be available in the future. Enforcement of circulation plans for pickup and drop-off.
Can you speak to that? What do you mean by enforcement? Your concerns are that...
Right. How are you going to make the parents use Bower Street? Said it's going to be a condition, but if there's no traffic out there, how do you stop the parents or guardians from taking that quick left onto Bowers and dropping off?
So that's separate from the drop-off part, as far as the transportation demand management. It's more the turning onto Bowers from Newtonville Avenue that you're concerned about.
Well, it's just the plan is to funnel all traffic from Newtonville to Harvard to Bowers. The question of enforcement is how can you ensure that path is going to be taken every time by every parent or guardian.
Okay. All right. That concludes the planning department's comments. Comments from the counselors. We are welcoming Counselor Albright to our session. We miss you. Please tell us what your comments are.
I have some questions. So, Attorney Morris, do you plan to put a fence on the play area, around the play area?
There is a fence inside the front. It's all fenced off now.
It is?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's good. Because
iron fence.
Worrisome. I was worried that when I heard that the drop-off was going to be on Newtonville Avenue, but I see using Bowers, I think it's a good... Sorry.
Yeah.
Using Bowers is a better idea because it really isn't that busy?
No, because the entrance to the daycare is on Bowers at that corner.
But I worry about the same thing that the planning department worries about, and that how are you going to stop people? So do the kids in the daycare come to all, they tend to all come in the morning at 9 and all tend to leave at 6, or is there a coming and going all day?
No, for the most part, it's basically between 7 and 9 and what, 5 to 7? What?
4 to
6. 4 to 6.
So it opens at 7?
Yes.
Okay. So there's a two-hour period where people are coming and then a two-hour period where people are leaving?
Right, exactly.
Okay.
I can tell you from personal experience, having taken my kids to the Sabbath school and driving down that Bower Street at 8 a.m., I've never seen more than one car parked in any one of those nine spaces.
Right. But the way things are going in Newtonville, that could change tomorrow.
If I could respond to one of the points that was made by the planning staff about having, you know, the play space on Walnut Street. I think it's kind of ironic because we spent a lot of debate and time, as you know, trying to enliven the village and approving the Austin Street development towards that end. And the old idea was to create more life in the village. And I can't think of any more evidence of life in the village than having the children's play space that, you know, that's visible yet protected at that location.
Yeah, as long as it's got a fence around it, I have no problem with where it is. But I am concerned about the drop off. How are you going to stop people from making that left turn and from coming? You know, how are you going to force them to do that whole circle around? I know I was thinking about the Teddy Bear Club Nursery School on Commonwealth Avenue, where they don't let anybody drop off. They have this drive-in, drive-out pattern, and they have staff out there that manages that. Are you going to have staff out there?
That's what I said in my opening remarks, and I think Lou and Mr. McCurry confirmed that, yes.
But for the full 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours at night?
Can't speak to that. They're over there nodding in an affirmative, yes.
So you'll have a staff person for the full drop-off time and for the full pick-up time. Okay, well, that will help. And will they be right on Bowers, right at the entrance there where the drop-off will be? I don't know how you're going to stop people from making that left turn. It's just...
Actually, the place, the corner, the two corners, the corner of Bowers coming in and the corner with the other opposite corner, that's not a big distance. And you could station someone at a point where they can observe both and readily observe anyone attempting to make that turn. You know, we have an analogy. The Cabot School now has a specific traffic guard that prevents people from basically discharging and picking up kids in the middle of the street.
And we know how well that's working.
Well, I can tell you, I personally had a conversation with the guy about that when I couldn't find a parking space. but the point being that there are ways of enforcement by having live beings there as opposed
well,
to...
Well, I'm pleased to hear that you're going to have coverage for the full 2 hours in the morning and at night. And my only other question is about the employees and where they're going to park. So I know four are going to be in one place and four are going to be in another place, okay. And the rest of them are elsewhere. I'm not sure where elsewhere is.
Again, as I said in my remarks, the landlord has sufficient flexibility to move people around and basically put all of those spaces on site now.
So nobody will have to use parking spaces, needed spaces, and move their car around.
That was the principal reason why we created those four additional spaces.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
Other counselors? Oh, Councilor Cuddy.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chair. Just had a question, Attorney Moss, on the screening of the outdoor play area. On some of the memos I read here, it says it's not required because there's no plan for one, but I hear people keep talking about this outdoor play area. So is there an outdoor play area, and why is it here not required?
You bring that up, site plan up. Yeah, well, you have a...
I have it on the plans.
You have a hard copy plan there.
Yeah, but then I go into the memorandum.
Oh, you have a hard copy. You have a site plan that's folded up. It's placed in your desk.
Yeah, I get that. I have that, yeah.
Right, take a look at that. The play area is identified on that.
Well, I see that, but then I looked through the memorandum that says since there's not one included.
Because it wasn't submitted in time for each publication for the
so planning department. It's actually in there now.
Yes.
Okay.
And
I just have one other technical question on the land, which doesn't mean anything to this really, but on that land that they gave back in the upper right-hand corner.
It runs here in this location here.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Basically
yeah.
The front of the church.
Yeah, I saw that on the plan. Yep. So the other question I have is in the upper right-hand corner of that turnpike property that was...
It's not turnpike property.
It was
identified as shaded because it was originally Dollar Street.
Right.
That was taken by the turnpike.
Church.
And then several years after that, they deeded to a church.
Okay.
I have the deed in my file.
That's okay. So right where that pointer is right now, where that red dot is, where is that little piece of street that goes in there? Is that still a city right away or something? That piece right there.
I asked Joe Porter why the city would have retained, you know, a strip of land when the rest of it was taken by Joe. You want to opine about that? Or?
That piece of Bower Street, because that's the remnant of Bower Street, wasn't taken by the Pike. And conjecture is, I believe they didn't take it because they didn't want to undermine the existing church. With the depth that they had to dig on to get to the Pike graves, I think they didn't want to undermine the church. So that portion of Bower Street was never taken by the state.
Is that used for anything now, like parking or anything? Is that just...
No, it's an 8-foot strip running into Bower Street in the middle of our locus.
That's it. Yeah, I saw when I went by it, but I couldn't figure out why it was left like that. So, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Councilor Lennon, President Lennon.
Just on the piece about the concern about the left-hand turn, would the petitioner be adverse to maybe doing a look back, you know, after a year to figure out if it's really problematic?
No. He would not be adverse.
All right. So you wouldn't mind doing it. All right. Can we, or 6 months or whatever it may be, just to ensure that, you know, all of a sudden we didn't create a problem there? I mean, it's not, we've done this before on other petitions, and it might be worthwhile.
So we explained to the client that the Land Use Committee and the board has now utilized that look back more frequently in situations like this, so that they're prepared for that question.
I suppose they could also go to traffic council and make a no left turn, although that would affect the whole neighborhood. Okay. Councilor Albright.
So can I ask you a question about when an infant arrives, you know, a baby, a six-month-old? I assume you take six-month-olds. Yeah. So you can't really, you know, sort of drop them off.
No, they would require the park and then bring the child in. But I think that's what Lou is underscoring, basically. If that's in the morning, despite the skepticism expressed by the planning staff, there's more than enough spaces. There's at least six spaces that we've identified that will be suitable for that short-term drop-off. So you have to actually enter the building.
Okay, so what's the cutoff age where they can drop off and leave versus the parents have to park?
Question is, what age would people be required to escort their child in personally? 1 year.
1 year. And so most of your kids will be over that age.
I think we had a breakdown in the report.
Yeah, I saw that.
One infant, 18 toddlers.
Okay.
I would just add, if I could, having had young children not too long ago, and now having children in the elementary schools where the blue zone is incredibly difficult to enforce, I must tell you, the principals all have trouble with that. It's called stop, drop, and roll, they call it now. And that's what you're supposed to do, stop, drop them off, and then roll away. I just can't believe that toddlers, even 1 to 2 years of age, are going to be always able to jump out of the car into the willing hands of a staff member and leave mom or dad or the guardian, you know, without some difficulty. So there's got to be some give on that. I don't know if 9 is enough, but that's what you're saying. 9 should be enough, at least for those 10-minute intervals.
That's right, and I think the president basically identified a working mechanism for assessing that situation over time and determining whether it requires some other additional measure or whether it works. But we have every reason to think now, based on the data that we have, that it will work.
And that data, it seems like the comparative daycare in Brookline, which sounds very similar, it had 22 or 23, I guess, drop off during the peak.
Who?
Yeah. Between 8 and 9, is that right?
There were 20, I think, from memory, 20 actual drop offs, but 22 children being dropped off because some had more than one.
Right, so that's 22 out of like a 60
and you said about 10 or 60, or 15 to 20% walked. So,
actually, there were 25% that walked there. We're estimating less here.
So that's about, you count for about 40 children, but so the other 20 just didn't come during that peak hour?
Well, the peak hour was 7 days. We did 1 hour. So if you double it, it'd be 40 plus. And then, you know, some parents might come at 9:30, 10 o'clock, and maybe some parents didn't drop off their kids that day. So
yeah,
they're licensed to 63, but maybe they actually serve 50 that day.
I guess, again, the concern would be that work schedules being what they are, it's not usually even, you know, as far as the pace. There's a bulge that
actually
occurs.
Spreading it out helps.
Because, of course, but
yeah,
it doesn't usually work out that way.
No. We never saw more than five at any time, whether it's morning or afternoon drop off pickup. So,
and you
saw five was the upper end, and we observed it could be different on a different day. Maybe it's six on some day, but five I thought was a pretty comfortable number, and it was more like one to two for every 10 minutes. And there were some 10 minute intervals where nothing happened at all.
Okay. Another, I think, reason to look back. Counselor Alden.
I'm sorry to keep harping on this issue, but every time I get an answer, I run through it in my head. So now I'm trying to picture a one-year-old getting out of the car and walking into a building by him or herself. That can't happen. No. We're going to have two people outside? Two people. So you don't mind if we put that as a condition, that there always have to be two people, so that one can be always there, one brings the other kid in, and then they come back and switch off, but you have to have two. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions or comments from the counselors? Any comments from the public? Okay. Well, at this time, a motion to close would be appropriate. We have a motion to close the public hearing from Councilor Auchincloss. All those in favor of closing the public hearing? That's 7-0. Motion to approve would be in order at this point. Councilor from the ward? Councilor Auchincloss excitedly moves to approve. Do we have a council order? It's in the back of our packet.
I'm afraid we don't. In the packets.
Oh, okay. Do we have it on the screen?
To be honest, we did not anticipate this one flipping tonight, so we do not have a prepared board order.
Oh, right. Okay. It's a little difficult without a draft. So I think that, should we have a discussion briefly about the conditions? Okay, I know the zoning ordinance will pretty much direct the findings, as always. So the conditions, other than the site plan and building permit conditions, what was heard tonight sounds like the parking plan and the drop-off plan are key. I just want to give the legal department some ideas on what to be putting in there. The conditions?
The two people at drop-off and pick-up.
Okay, you got that, Bob?
Six-month look back.
The parking plan that's been, the parking management plan that's been proposed, which includes MBTA subsidies for employees, and did I read correctly, parents as well? But that was part of the, but something to that effect, if you don't intend that.
Either it's carpooling or ride sharing with parents.
It says monthly pass information for employees and parents. That's just in.
Are we going to quantify what the relief is for the commuter rail passes?
I don't think we usually do. That's something else. We're going to have a working session after this. It's just we're trying to make sure that we flush out all the issues so that goes as smoothly as possible. Any other concerns about the fencing? Was raised as far as around the play space. We want to make sure that it's adequate.
As long as if it's on the site plan, as you know, as a fence, then they'll have to maintain it there.
It is a little unclear to me. So can you put up? Okay. So are you talking about Terry, are you talking about the dotted line that kind of is serpentine there, halfway through the front? Or is that just a, like, how are you going to block off the walkway?
It is called out on the plan as a wrought iron fence that runs from...
Oh, I see, to the edge of the walkway there.
All past the play area. It encompasses all the play area up to and around the walkway, and then it continues along. So the only space that's not closed off is the actual the walkway entrance. I'm not sure whether that's gated.
Is that going to be gated?
That is gated.
Okay.
It's been kept open just, you know, kept open because there's just, but it's functional. It can be gated. It can be closed.
Okay, and the height of it is adequate as far as industry standards for children play areas? I mean, there's some awareness of what is usually required or used?
I can't speak to that, but we'll certainly investigate that.
Okay, I think that's important.
Mr. Chair, I think, I remember now that you say it's a wrought iron fence, I remember it, but it might be wide enough for little kids to get through, so you'll have to pay attention to that.
Well, it could be possible. To maintain the aesthetics, I think everyone values the wrought iron. One could basically, put a mesh, screen up on the inside to prevent that.
Right.
I don't see that as a serious problem.
And then as far as play spaces, I think that there are some rules and regulations about the surface and the amount of space around a structure that's required.
So that was just a condition that basically says that the play space shall be compliant with all applicable regulations. You know.
So
what about handicap accessibility for kids? I mean, how do you get in and out? Is it on a single story? Are there stairs? Is there any handicap accessibility?
Elevator? There's an elevator.
Is an elevator to get into the building? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the landlord's here saying yes, it is.
Okay.
That's helpful. So I think that at this time it's appropriate to hold until the next working session. We'll try to do that as soon as possible. We don't want to delay you. Do we have a sense, Nadia, as to when that might be? 24th of May. Okay. Tentatively. Okay? All right. Thank you all.
Councilors, thank you very much for your time.
Great.
I didn't know if the Councilor Auchincloss made a motion to approve. I didn't know if he wanted to withdraw it and amend it to hold. I think he made a motion to approve, but I'll withdraw my motion to approve and amend it to a motion to hold.
Thank you. Well, I don't know what we do without the committee clerk. I'm not going to comment on that. All right. Last but not least, 130-16, special permit for 260, 270, and 280 Elliott Street, the Roman Catholic Archbishop of Boston. This is a parking stall waiver at 260 Elliott Street, Ward 5. Good evening, Attorney Lee.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. Once again, good evening, members of the Land Use Committee. My name is Lawrence Lee with the law firm of Rosenberg, Freeman & Lee. My partner, Jason Rosenberg, apologizes that he cannot be here tonight, and I am here in his stead.
With me tonight are Karen and Chris Osborne, who are actually under a purchase and sale agreement to purchase 260 Elliott Street. So what we have before you is a petition by the Roman Catholic Church that owns the 106,000 square foot parcel at 260, 270, and 280 Elliott Street. What we're looking to do is seek a parking waiver from the committee and the City Council to allow for the A&R subdivision of 260 Elliott Street, which is the St. Elizabeth Center, so that Karen and Chris can purchase it for reuse. Part of the subdivision is 8 parking spaces that is currently existing in the parking lot. Basically, I don't want to regurgitate all the parking calculations and numbers. In short, we are basically asking for a 21 parking space waiver along with some of the parking regulations. We're trying to, part of the petition is to maintain the non-conforming nature of the existing parking lot, some of the parking dimensions, maneuvering aisles, lighting, landscaping, and so forth that we're going to be maintaining as the same. We have worked consistently with the planning department on the requirements, and I believe at the end of the discussions, the planning department has asked for some peripheral landscaping on the street areas, as well as a bike rack on the facility. This is really a phase one of it. As I said, Karen and Chris are going to be purchasing the property. Phase two, they may be coming back to you for additional relief as they come up with plans for the development and the reuse, really, of the 260 Elliott Street. From what I understand, the Upper Falls Area Council has sent its approval of the petition. Jason has spent a lot of time speaking with certain counselors about this petition, and out of the interest of time and respect of your time, we've asked that those who are here in support have one member to speak if they're in agreement, and maybe after that person speaks, they can show their hands, and those who are here in support of the petition. Certainly, if anyone is here in opposition, we can certainly let them speak, but that's where we stand.
Good. Thank you very much, Trey Lee. Planning, do you have any particular comments on this?
The basic comment is that they are really trying to kind of normalize the non-conforming nature of the existing lot, also allowing the sale of 8 spaces. Can we just quickly go through the requested relief, special permit, to go 21 parking spaces, waive some setback, parking and setback requirements, parking within 5 feet of the building with dwelling units, fit and store dimensions. Road regulations, so we have a moving aisle within the parking lots, where certain parking lots screening requirements, interior landscaping requirements, some lighting requirements, and I believe they are no longer requesting to raise the bike parking requirements. So the criteria to consider in this case is just whether or not this is an appropriate site location for these waivers, whether the waivers will adversely affect the neighborhood, whether it will create any nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles and pedestrians, whether access to the site or the street is appropriate for the types and numbers of vehicles, and also some views of parking waivers. These waivers can be made if the council determines that little compliance is impractical due to the nature of the use, the location, size of the exact shape or grade of the lot, or the circumstances within the public interest, and the interest of safety or protection of environmental features. Now just some graphics to explain what's proposed. This is essentially the parish campus, with the church to the right, and the existing rectory to its left. The parcel in red shows the portions of the site that will be sold off, including the, Old St. Elizabeth Center in the 8th Stations, down next to the N in Linden. So here's the existing site plan, which again shows most of the information. The next one, shows the parcel that will be sold and deeded out in the upper right-hand corner, within 7 existing buildings and 8 spaces. In addition, this point is that there are no changes to be proposed or made to the existing parking lots as there are now. This is just a photo of the map.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kleba. Any member of the public wish to be heard at this time? Just raise your hand if you wish to be heard. We'll start here and then we'll go to the back. Come on up, please, sir. For those who don't know our protocol, state your name and address, and I ask you to keep your remarks to 3 minutes or less, please. Good evening.
Certainly. My name is Amir Audience. I am at 11 Tamarack Road. I'm in Newton Upper Falls. I'm also president of the Newton Upper Falls Area Council. I'm here in support of the petition. The St. Elizabeth Center has been a part of the Upper Falls community for over 100 years. It used to serve as a vital part of village life, both as a parish hall and as a church community center as part of Mary Immaculate Parish. We would be, and the area council would like to see it return to that role as a major part of village life, and we believe that the Osborne's proposal is the best opportunity to do that, and you know, we support the current petition because we believe that the additional parking will make the St. Elizabeth Center site more useful. At our April meeting, we met and heard discussion of the petition and approved it unanimously, voted unanimously to support it. And I would urge the members of the committee tonight to look favorably on the petition for relief.
Great. Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate that. And appreciate the area council taking the time to weigh in and offer its comments.
Oh, certainly. Thank you.
Next, please. Gentleman in the back, come on up, please. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Hi, my name is Michael Fleming. I live at 953 Chestnut Street. I'm a lifelong resident of Newton Upper Falls. I grew up with the Osborne family, living 3 houses away. The Osbornes have been a great supporter of the Upper Falls for many years. Karen and Chris have given back to the community on numerous occasions. Karen has organized a summer concert for years, and Chris has been the driving force behind the community dinner at Echo Bridge for many years. They left the church of St. Elizabeth Center and created a community gathering place to return the property to what it once was. As children, we enjoyed neighborhood dances, bazaars, and Sunday school in the building. Speaking with Karen and Chris, they have expressed their desire to return the building to a place where the community can gather and unify as a neighborhood like we did as children. I hope the committee understands their intentions and supports their proposals. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else who wish to speak? I understand silence doesn't mean lack of interest. I know quite the contrary. I suspect most, if not all of you, are here in favor of the petition, as Mr. Lee has indicated. And if you want, Mr. Lee, you can get a show of hands to see who's here in favor of it. It'll be helpful. Great. Thank you all very much. Is there anybody else who wishes to speak at this time? Seeing none, Councillor Crosley, it's your ward. Do you want to move to close the public hearing?
I will move to close the public hearing. I would like to also offer my comments, if
please
I may.
Please do, sure.
Which is, I think it's rare that a community is given the opportunity to accept such a gift. And I've only lived in Upper Falls for 31 years, so I'm a relative newcomer.
31 years is short by Newton standards,
Dr. Crosley. But I'm looking at the group out here, so I get that. But this is very much my beat, and I've been watching this lovely, poor building fall apart for such a long time. It really has been pretty much neglected. And it's so terrific that these folks are coming in and offering to do this really big project. So I realize what we're doing here tonight is offering parking waivers, but I wanted to, you know, it's the same, it's the parking has always been there. And the parking has, I have actually never seen the lot full. Most days, the lot has barely any cars in it. So as in terms of the matter that's before us tonight, I realize that it's the Archdiocese who's asking us to assign 8 spaces to the property so that they may sell it to, or so that they will sell it to the Osbornes. So with that, I will move to close the public hearing.
Wonderful. Thank you. There's a motion to close the public hearing, but before we do, Councillor Yates, do you want to say something on the project?
Not before we close the public hearing.
All right. Why don't we move to close the public hearing? All in favor of closing public hearing? I've got 1, 2, 3, 7 in favor, none opposed. The public hearing is closed. Do I have a motion to approve, Councillor Crosley? Motion to approve. Comments, Councillor Yates.
I'd just like to second what has been said here, that I go back to when St. Elizabeth Center was used as a Sunday school site, which shows you how long ago that was. The building itself used to be on the corner where the church is, more than 100 years ago, when it was... St. Mary Immaculate itself was built about strictly 100 years ago. This building was moved out of the way, and I think because of its visibility that's on a major street, it has a large interior space, and it is tremendously, has tremendous potential. The Osbornes have been dedicated philanthropists in the community from their childhoods, I think the fact that they've actually, and they've engaged Mr. Lee and his firm, and they and Mr. Rosenberg have worked very closely with the city planning and law departments to come up with solutions that will enable this to be carried out in the most expeditious way is very beneficial. So this is in some ways a perfect solution to what was a long-standing problem of that beautiful building, centrally located, but underused for several years. So unused for several years. So I certainly recommend that the Land Use Committee and the full council do approve this as the first step towards the restoration of St. Elizabeth Center.
Great, thank you. Other questions or comments by my colleagues? Just briefly, I note that Attorney Rosenberg is making a recovery from an illness, and I did speak with him, Attorney Lee, and on behalf of the committee, we can convey our hope that he is back with us very quickly, and I hope you do convey that to him. And I'll just briefly add, it doesn't get better than when your two counselors from a particular ward speak so enthusiastically about a project. That says a great deal, and it's quite obvious this is a project that meets with broad approval, and we're looking forward to the next petition. So with that, we have a motion to approve. Do I have a draft board order?
When is the legislature in the project on Friday? We have a new draft. There were a few changes, fairly minor. If you want, you can hand it out, or I can just go over.
Is this the
draft? They all reflected up here.
This is the old or the new?
New.
The new?
New.
Okay. Are people comfortable following along on the screen here, or do you want to see a paper cut? I think we're all comfortable just following up here.
Yeah.
So, we don't need to read out loud. Why don't we just take a minute and read this particular paragraph, and then we'll offer any commentary or suggestions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Any comments or questions on the first finding? Are we comfortable, just asking as a procedural question, are we comfortable with the last sentence which talks about the petitioner having submitted information indicating the existing number of stalls are sufficient to meet the expected demand, or do we just want to say that more affirmatively? Councilor Lennon, you're okay with this language? Any questions? Okay. I mean, I'm somewhat agnostic on it, but I wanted to point that out. We're putting in something in a board order that talks about what a petitioner is giving us as opposed to our findings. Mr. Waddick, do you have any comment on that?
You could move a little bit, perhaps, Mr. Chairman, by saying, that based on the information that the petitioner has provided to council or the committee colleagues.
Yeah, I think that would be better. I think we need to make findings, and obviously we're stating the basis for our finding, but I think that'd be a better way of phrasing it. Any other comments on the first finding? Ms. Scruda, let's move on to the next one if we could, please.
Okay. Here's number two. Basically getting to the point that we are reflecting what it's doing now.
Okay. Questions on this one, folks? All right, seeing none, that looks fine. Do we have any more findings here?
Nope.
Okay. Any conditions that we want to take up, anything unusual? So I note that the second one requires a landscape plan. It's Mr. Lee, perimeter screening, you're all set with that requirement? You comfortable with that?
Can I ask?
Sure, Councilor Schwartz.
I'm familiar with the ANR in the past. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Sorry. They have to submit essentially an administrative review for the planning department, but it's not something that we need to approve.
I see. Okay.
Am I correct, Ms. Anand?
Yes, it's just a plan that officially subdivides the lot into the two separate lots. And it's submitted to the engineering division. It requires no approval because the lots both meet the dimensional requirements.
But they have some process whereby engineering looks at it to make sure that it meets engineering requirements.
That meets requirements.
That specifically relates to landscape plan?
Pardon?
I'm looking at number two. Why are they put together if they're not related?
We can separate them out.
Why don't we say this? Why don't we simply put the period after the director of planning and development period, and I don't think new before submitting approval not required plan. Does that work?
So that was put there to provide a trigger point as to when they would submit it.
Oh, I see. I didn't understand that. So that's just the ANR is the time point that they have to do it beforehand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I forget. I raised that point.
I'm just wondering if we can wordsmith that a little bit. How about before submitting any plans to subdivide the lot? Okay? I don't want to presume in this order what they're going to do, even though we know what the intent is. And I think, again, I'm uncomfortable with tying it as something that has not been filed yet. Is there some way of, do we want to have it done within a certain time period, Ms. Anand?
We can work with the law department in the next.
Yeah, why don't we just do that? I just don't think it should be tied into something that's not even before. So, I mean, for some unforeseen reason, this could be delayed a year. I don't want to have a problem because of that, and I don't want them back here, frankly. Okay, at least not for this one. I know we're getting the next one coming in. Okay. Number four, I think we can wordsmith that a little bit too. We have I think some language that we've used before, Mr. Waddick, in connection with the landscape plan, that they're responsible for maintaining them. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Mr.
One of the things on number four is I don't believe in the past board orders there's in the parentheses the annual inspection language. That's something that I haven't seen in the past.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I'm not sure who would do the inspection or how we enforce that. I think it's better simply to say that you're supposed to maintain them in good condition,
exactly.
Period. That's pretty clear. And if they're not, that's a violation of the board order. Mr. Waddick, if you could work with the planning department on that, that'd be helpful. All right, next. Is that it? Easy enough. Okay. Questions on the conditions, anyone? All right, seeing none, we have a motion by Councilor Crosley to approve. All in favor of approval? I have 8 in favor, none opposed. Mr. Lee, as I'm sure you know, this gets taken up at the next full council meeting, which time we'll vote on it, and we'll go forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much. That concludes our meeting this evening. We are adjourned.
What happened? No, nothing's ever coming off of anything.